Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a fantastic new theater event to be sharing with you, a fantastic festival, if you will. And joining us to talk to us about this, we have the executive director and visual artist with Satellite Collective, Laura Robertson, and the artistic director and visual artist with Satellite Collective, Kevin Draper. As I mentioned, they're both with Satellite Collective, and they're part of their presentation of Satellite Tribeca. It's happening May 9th through the 21st at Satellite Gallery, which is at 101 Reed Street. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting satellitecollective.org. This is a fabulous, fabulous performing arts, visual arts event. This is a wonderful, wonderful off Broadway kind of experience, and we're so excited to be able to share this with you. And the perfect people to tell us more about this event is our guest. So let's welcome them on. Laura, Kevin, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Andrew.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a thrill so far speaking with you off the air, and I'm so excited about this event that you're bringing here to New York, Satellite Tribeca. Just reading it, it sounds incredible. So, Kevin, I'm going to start with you as the artistic director. Can you tell us a little bit about what this event is, as Satellite Tribeca?
Well, to put it in just a single sentence, we're going to bring all of the production elements and arts of dance, spoken word, live music, and visual arts into a gallery space for the first time and see how that conversation works out with our audience for a couple weeks. We think that we might be one of the loudest galleries down in Tribeca during that part of the festival season.
I love that. Yes, making up some noise.
Exactly. Their inspiration for that goes all the way back to some of the artists that we're working with in this show. In fact, artists who worked in the early 70s in New York and took social positions on the city and its policies, like Gordon Matta Clark. We are working with that estate. We have always been, therefore, a direct reflection of what the performing arts looks like in New York at any given time. Our dancers and our musicians and all of our other artists are being drawn from across the full spectrum. So that's always been kind of a fun aspect of the organization. But we have also, our pivot during COVID was, as everyone found the stages closed, everyone had some sort of a pivot. We chose to start what we call the Fellows Program. And that was a package of financial services and professional development and then networking that we offered to a select cohorts of artists that we interviewed and picked. And we did that with small groups. And the artists themselves support the program through the fiscal sponsorship fees that for the financial services. But because it was an artist-run program, we were able to do that, you know, at like a half to a third of what the corporations were doing. So what that got us was kind of when you have some revenues from services, it cuts down on the number of times you have to ask your friends for checks after the parties, right?
Right.
So our social life was a little less stress. But more importantly, answers a really tough question for an arts organization, which is, especially one like this, which is consists of groups of people exploring subjects, is how to not age out of your audience's age brackets and the cohorts of people that are interested in what you do. So while we've been at this since 2010, which was the year we founded, we've had three or four reinventions as new generations of people came aboard. And the Fellows is our most recent effort at being able to do that. So some of these young artists who've proven themselves over the years, Body Sonic, Muscline Park Harrison, they will actually be the first thing that we open the show with, doing site-specific dance that they've developed through residencies and workshops in upstate New York. So there's a mix. We have younger artists who are embarking on larger, more serious works. And then we have our own ballets and full productions, which we are excerpting and previewing. And so you put those two together, that's how we're getting the show. And that was our COVID pivot, was to try and do something. And it worked out to be well enough that it's now a part of our structure. And the fellows will be also a big part of the film symposium, right, Laura?
Yes, a big part of our fellows program are emerging filmmakers. We offer fiscal sponsorship, professional development, and it really is a customized service. We're small enough that we can work with these filmmakers one-on-one and really decide what it is that they need to get an extra leg up, and we're here to offer that help.
So the film symposium itself contains a panel in which the guided discussion is war stories of fundraising and film fundraising. So we're not taking ourselves too seriously, but a topic of much interest to young directors. And then of course we'll have some beer, right? So this is the kind of thing that we can't do in a performing arts stage. It's the intimate longers. I mean, this is the first time that Satellite Collective has brought a full scope show to the gallery space. So we've always worked in these, modern, open, they're like technically complex theater spaces like Baryshnikov Arts Center, right? Like Bam Fisher, like cutting edge black boxes where we never encountered resistance to what we might want to do theatrically, right? The risk was not saying no to your own bad ideas, right? Because the theater was capable of implementing whatever we thought of. But what that also meant was that, we had to curate these intense there's so many words to say multi, but these experiences only lasted an hour, but we were cramming full ballets, music scores, multiple performances, spoken word, visual, and graphics all into that hour and 10 minutes. And that is like that's our signature, frankly, that we'll do that. And now, rather than just meeting people in the lobby afterward where they're somewhat dazzled and a little confused by the quantity of what just got put at them, we have the opportunity to have some relaxed conversations too, and to interact. It's the same production qualities that we'll bring in there in terms of the music and the lighting stuff. So we'll see how intense that is. But I think the thing that really distinguishes this venue is how much the visual arts are brought to the fore. What I kind of wanted to close with in terms of the show was, after having spoken to those other items, was that over time, we basically have formed the habit of creating comic books that we use to teach and talk to all of the artists in our collaborations because of the different ways that people come at stories and art. And so we've been basically visual right from the start. And so the visual artists coming to the fore in this regard, there is some purpose in that. We're claiming new visual territory. We're putting out what we think our next productions are going to look like.
That is so wonderful. Laura, I want to jump to you. And Kevin kind of touched on this. He kind of spoke about the inspiration behind the festival, but I kind of want to dive more into where did you guys come up with the idea for this year's festival? And what was the process like in selecting the pieces that are being featured?
Well, I think that this year's festival is really contingent on the venue. We've always presented our work alongside of our collaborators in a very traditional proscenium stage or black box theater type of a situation. And this time we decided to challenge ourselves and bring the performative aspects into a gallery setting, which is going to highlight the visual arts more so than we have in the past. We are still obviously going to bring in our wonderful dancer and musician friends and collaborators. And there's something for everybody over the course of 2 weeks. There's film, dance, live music, lots of visual art hanging on the walls. So yeah, so this is kind of a way to challenge ourselves and see if this formula works in a new sort of space. And certainly working with Gordon Matta Clark's estate, site specificity is something that we like to challenge ourselves with.
I would, Laura, maybe you want to talk even a little bit. This show represents also a lot of different programs that were planned and implemented with the intention of bringing them all together here in New York. We, like everyone else, got bumped a little bit by COVID, but we kind of benefited from that because we turned to regional partners and we were able to produce some premier ballets and some large sculpture works that are now core to the program we're working on for the fall and we'll be showing bits and pieces from. Lori, you are the star of the Grand Rapids Ballet. It was a 50th anniversary program. They're the only one of the few regional professional ballet companies outside of the major cities. And we worked with Danielle Rowe, who is now artistic director of the Oregon Ballet Theater, to develop the ballet Liar, Liar, King, which you'll hear us referring to.
Yes, our partnership with Grand Rapids Ballet last year was mainly the development of Liar, Liar, King, which is a ballet with an original score, films, and also film masking technique that we've developed over the last 10 years where the stage goes dark and then we actually run a film that's masked over the dancers' bodies. And so that was at the Grand Rapids stage last fall, and we will be bringing it to New York this fall. And so this pop-up show is going to offer a preview of that ballet and also Echo and Narcissus, which we showed at Bam Fisher right before the pandemic.
Yeah. So those two, just for clarification, those two ballets, Echo and Narcissus and Liar, Liar, King, were written as part one and two, and we're workshopping them as an evening length. It'll be our biggest production. That's what we're looking forward to. You'll see, well, the full score is going to play. There'll be a string quartet of the full score for the ballet. But Laura, you're going to show your film too. We have it's a preview because it is going on the festival circuit, so we can't show. We'll have a bit of an after party.
Yeah, we always start with a libretto, and that will be the jumping off point for all of the arts verticals. The libretto was the inspiration for the short film Liar, Liar, King, and for the ballet. And then we had two separate scores: one for the ballet commissioned, and also one for the film. And so those works of arts stand very strongly on their own, but they also make for a very compelling evening length performance for an audience.
So for theatricality, I mean, we literally grabbed a hold of King Lear is what we did and boldly worked with that. So it couldn't be much more theatrical, but the timeliness of the story, it lends it enough of an edge that we don't have to be directly referential to our own politics right now. The pieces are set in New York. All our ballets have been set in different time periods of New York, mainly because we're just in love with the city. But the story itself, we did not adapt. What we did was, in order to fit that, the story of that into a 30-minute ballet, we focused on Cordelia. And without operating as any dramaturg would, which is we pulled out of that play all of Cordelia's life and actions and reference points and so simply focused on her to the exclusion really of the rest of the drama, but we did not change anything. So the sequence of her story remains, and you can see what a different story it really is when it's not about King Lear, right? And so the short film, and this is where Laura's work comes to the fore, we used the short film because we could be clear about our intentions creatively, what we thought it would look like, what we thought it would sound like, the pacing of the story, and the attitude toward the story. Because, well, I think one of your questions later is asking what kind of message we want to leave with an audience. And to the extent that you can, it's really, you know, more of an awareness that narcissism and bullying, that they function inside of families, but that it can steer the course of a society as a whole and surprisingly fast in a modern propagandistic environment. So that is why the focus is on both the myth of Echo and Narcissus, which has its own statements to make about entrancement, and King Lear, which has a lot to say about how the spoils of power are divided. But we think that we don't have to be any more specific than that for it to be very timely. And that's really what we're looking forward to putting on the stage.
That is fantastic. I am loving all that. So, sticking with you first on this, Laura, what has it been like developing this first ever festival of this sort?
We are enjoying it so much that we're pretty convinced that this will not be the last time that we do this sort of format. It's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure working with artists of all different descriptions. But the visual arts world is something that Kevin and I are want to be more directly involved with. And they've been very warm and welcoming, and it's just been a great experience so far. Our other artists inside of Satellite are very open to this idea. They're embracing it wholeheartedly, and it's been a very rewarding experience.
That is wonderful. Kevin, jumping to you, I mean, you've mentioned these brilliant ballets and wonderful sculptures and films and such. What about for you? What has it been like developing this year for you?
Well, because so many different programs came together, I would say the first thing is it's kind of stressful when you have to stack stuff up like that, right? We were, if the ballet had been poorly received, it would have toppled this show, and then we wouldn't be prepared for, I mean, it's both the curse and the adventure, right? Of the quality of work you need to have to stage, right? So it's such a long path. But I mean, obviously I wouldn't be doing anything else anyway, right? I love it. But well, on one hand, seeing that the stories we're telling right now are tragedies, I'm not happy to see that they remain timely to the cultural events, but I think we have a lot to say about that just because the nature of how we work. What I bring to it is not entirely altruistic. As a I'm trained as an architect, and most of my early education was in architecture. And the theater has always been just completely like a playground for me, right? I can do anything I want spatially and with light, and I can follow any kind of design criteria that amaze me and practice the art of architecture, but I don't have to deal with construction crews, unions, concrete, or insurance, or you know what. So I have always held on jealously to that. Satellite Collective has been built to give artists a chance to pick the topics they're interested in. So my answer is I'm having a great time. These are all subjects of interest to me and to the rest of us right now.
That is fantastic. I love that. Now, Kevin, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but what is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from Satellite Tribeca?
Well, first off, I was about to give a super serious answer, but we're going to make sure that we have a coffee cart outside, and that what we really do is provide the neighborhood with mid to late evening entertainment in the gallery environment there, where we know that shows wrap up, openings wrap up in the 6 to 7 time period, and that we might be the stop for people to unwind a little bit and but still be engaged in an artistic conversation. So we want to demonstrate that that's possible, for one thing, that it's not just an old experiment from the 70s, but that it is possible. And secondly, to take advantage of that audience, to show them our vision for the future. I mean, my work is very, very oriented toward ideas about urbanity, about intelligence and spirit and artificial intelligence in those environments. So, I mean, I'm literally drawing it out there for people to see. I hope, of course, there's a positive response to my art, but it's also the comic book that we'll be using for our next explorations.
That is fantastic. Laura, how about you? What is the message or thought you're hoping that attendees and audiences take away from this year's Satellite Tribeca?
I think what we're trying to do is really provide a salon environment, fostering community and conversation, getting different sorts of artists with their different practices, collaborating together, maybe introduce some people, maybe inspire some new works. We're really looking for, a groundswell of inspiration to come out of this location. That's why we're programming so many events, so many interactive community experiences for the neighborhood.
I love that. And that is a great snowball into my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to this event? And Laura, I'm going to start first with you on that.
Well, we would certainly like the arts community to come out and take a look at what we're presenting on the walls. Come by and introduce yourselves. Tell us what you're doing. We always love to talk to artists. We love to talk to other galleries, anyone in the community. We want to hear about what you're doing. We want to tell you about what we're doing. And who knows, maybe some great collaboration will come out of introductions like that. So yeah, if we, I mean, it's such a dream to have an art show in New York, in Tribeca, and we feel so very lucky that we're making this happen. And we just want people to know that we're excited and enthusiastic. And we want to talk to you. So,
Fantastic.
A big part of our audience has always been artists, so we're looking for, you know, we're looking forward to spending some time with a chunk of the artistic community in all the different arts verticals.
Love that. Kevin, is there anything else you'd like to add in regards to who you hope have access?
I do want to add that all of our content is consumable online, so as Laura noted earlier, we insist that the pieces stand alone as works of art, so that be consumed by people who are, to the extent of their abilities and their access. In fact, much of the content that we'll be showing will be live on the site to be seen. Some of it is in creation, so that won't be the case, but I want to make sure that that's clear. We'll make the access online is there.
Our interviews, we love to let our listeners get to know our guests a little bit better, pick your brains, if you will. And I want to start by asking you our age-old first question, which is what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or just some of your favorites? And because we're in general dealing with the wide world of art, I mean, let's open up to any artists in general that inspire you. And Laura, let's start first with you on that.
Oh, well, I just had the pleasure of watching Maestro, and I am really into Bradley Cooper as a filmmaker. The films he is making are so extraordinary, and his point of view is really important right now. It's very fresh. And then I, of course, I did a deep dive into Leonard Bernstein and been shooting a lot in the studio these last few weeks, and that has definitely been my soundtrack. What a prolific, magnificent artist he was. Who else? Louis Bourgeois, the sculptor, always. I'm developing a work about Cleopatra as a complete person right now, and so I've been doing a deep dive into Liz Taylor as an actor, and she was extraordinary always. Writers, of course, Truman Capote, because I just started the Feud series. So, In Cold Blood is one of my all-time favorite books, but I am making a point of reading Capote's Esquire articles to do more of a deep dive into his work. He didn't leave a lot of work examples behind, which is unfortunate, but the ones he did leave behind are very mighty, packed with power.
I love that list. That is a beautiful list. I could keep picking your brain about it, but I love the start of that.
My tastes lend a little bit less toward New York society. But Wim Wenders, you saw the Wim Wenders film that he did on Pina Bausch. So both my favorite director and then all of a sudden my favorite choreographer. This had a profound impact on me. I mean, I just had never seen how you could put theater next to music and dance and not have it be in charge of the proceedings, so to speak, right? So it had a really big impact on me. And that's partly because of Wim Wenders, too. Wings of Desire, his film that switches between black and white and color and French, German, and English is probably like, I don't have, I wouldn't say it was a favorite, but it certainly has influenced my thought in pretty much everything. And then Laura will tell you, I have just a very strange reading list. Whatever happens to pique my curiosity. I think but frankly, I was, as an architect, I approach things just a little bit differently. So some of my inspiration comes from writers and art, but engineers are a part of my peer group too. And that means I have, as Laura will tell you, a huge fixation on machinery. I spend inordinate amounts of time reading about machines. So I don't know if that's inspiration, but there you go. I do love machines in every form.
I love it still. That is a fabulous, fabulous list of inspiration. And we have now arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory? Or in the case of our interview, what's your favorite performing arts memory?
Well, actually, when I was in high school, I was very involved in the local theater in Manistee, Michigan, the Ramsdell Theater, a historical old building that has been meticulously preserved. And then I was the stage manager. That was my high school job in that theater. And we produced all the Usual Suspects, Annie, Sound of Music, The King and I, all of those great theater productions. So I actually grew up backstage in theater, and it's all a good memory for me. I absolutely
That
love
wasn't
it.
that wasn't that James Earl Jones' summer residence?
It was James Earl Jones started his acting career at the Ramsdell Theater. Yes, he did.
Oh, look at you trudging those famous floorboards. That's amazing. What a memory. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Kevin.
I have an answer. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to just say, Kevin, what
Oh, I was
about
just saying, we thought
you?
about it. My answer is totally nerdy. It was just I had we Brandon Sterling Baker was or is rather he's the lighting designer, he's the lighting director of at the Boston Ballet, but at the time was working in New York, and he let me in on a tech rehearsal for a Broadway show, a big Broadway show. And that means that all of the tech tables and boards and computers are out, and it is a fuller theater than when there's an audience in there. And it was like being inside of a spaceship, and I just was overwhelmed by like the size of that machine, and like it's basically formed my idea of how to do theater at this point. And that was and frankly, it was Hard Body was the show, right? Which was bunch of people standing around a truck and they couldn't take their hands off it, which really, in hindsight, is not exactly the limitation you want to put on Broadway actors, right? You cannot move from that spot, right? But just the technical aspects of that was incredible, because the boundaries to me be like between movies, between videos, between film, Zoom conferences, that's all. They're so foggy at this point. The machinery is so dense and complex that creates that content. And I was really taken by that.
That is a
But
wonderful memory as well.
I.
Well, as we wrap things up here, I would just want to sneak in this question and ask, do you either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Laura, you have
Kevin,
major
I
castings.
I do. I have a solo exhibition coming up at Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is a very conservative chunk of the country, and this deals with women's autonomy. I've done some bronze sculptures and we'll create an installation inside of the church, which will also have holographic films.
Very cool. Some exciting things then going on. That sounds wonderful. And a great lead into my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Satellite Tribeca or about either of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So satellitecollective.org, you'll find right on our homepage all of our program information, as well as access to the tickets. As some shows are ticketed, others are registration only. And then my personal website is kevindraper.org. And Laura, your website is laurarobertson.com, where you can see more of the visual artist's work. And I think that would give a pretty good cross-section.
Wonderful. Well, Laura, Kevin, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me today and sharing this incredible event coming to New York this May. I really appreciate your time today and just everything that you've shared. So thank you so much.
Andrew, thank
Thank you
you.
so
Thank you
much.
for hosting us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you. My guests today have been the executive director and visual artist with Satellite Collective, Laura Robertson, and the artistic director and visual artist, Kevin Draper. They're both with Satellite Collective, which is presenting Satellite Tribeca. It's happening May 9th through the 21st at Satellite Gallery, which is at 101 Reed Street. Tickets and more information are available at satellitecollective.org. And we also have some contact information for our guests that will be posted in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But this is a great way to get out of the house, or I guess in our case, the apartment, and head down to the beautiful neighborhood that is Tribeca. Take in that beautiful early summer weather and see some incredible art. Gather around, have a conversation afterwards. There's some wonderful, wonderful exhibitions happening. You can head to the website, satellitecollective.org, to check out all the information about it. But make sure you join us May 9th through the 21st at Satellite Gallery for Satellite Tribeca. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.